Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Almost a century ago, when America first got the estate tax, nobody said it was mainly about revenue. It was mainly about not being a banana republic of the rich and the rest. It was in the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt and Justice Louis Brandeis, often quoted saying, "We can have concentrated wealth in the hands of a few, or we can have democracy, but we can't have both." Now the estate tax debate is back in the middle of the tax deal rumpus in Washington. This hour on Point, getting the estate tax right. You can join the conversation. What's right here? What's fair? What's good for the country, the economy, your family? And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Washington is Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill. Welcome back, Bob. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Where does this thing stand? The House Democrats are saying it's all about the estate tax at this point for them. When is this going to, you know, sort of rubber hit the road on this?
Well, it's got to be soon. The House Democrats are very upset with what the Senate and the president has endorsed, and basically they have endorsed what Republicans wanted on the estate tax, the estate tax rate of 35% with a $5 million exemption, what Democrats in the House wanted, and certainly a few in the Senate, but the Senate Democrats have gone along with it, is more along the lines of a 45% tax rate. And Democrats say that this would only help actually less than 1% of the nation's families, 0.3%. Percent is what Senator Bernie Sanders said, who was vigorously opposed to this deal. But the problem is that they don't have much time to amend it, and there are people on the left that are very frustrated with this deal, and now there's actually growing intense opposition growing on the right for this. So Republicans are saying, we agreed to a deal, and if you change the deal, then we're going to walk away with it, because there are some Tea Party activists who don't like the unemployment provisions in this deal. So the left doesn't like the estate tax. The right doesn't like the unemployment benefits of 13 months, which are not paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the deal is right now. And I think that House Democrats are going to have to swallow the Senate bill and do something that they don't like and basically accept the Senate provisions on the estate tax.
So the whole tax deal on the line here. And interestingly, this time we're not debating whether or not to have an estate tax, which Republicans have often, you know, pushed that debate itself. This is about gradations here. Why do the Republicans say, what's their message here, Bob, about why they are so determined to stick at this $5 million exemption, 35% tax on the rest?
Well, they say they call it the death tax, and this has been a debate that's been raging for years, and we've had two people in the Senate who have been working for the last couple of years to try to get a deal, to try to get 60 votes in the Senate, and that's Senator John Kyle, a Republican from Arizona, and a conservative Democrat, Senator Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas, who lost her reelection race. So we don't have any liberal Democrat in those discussions, and basically they have both embraced this deal. So that's the problem for liberal Democrats, and part of the problem too is that these tax cuts were expiring. The Democrats knew they were expiring. A lot of the Congress were dealing with health care reform, and then they have been really scrambling to come up with a strategy over the last couple of months, even the last couple of weeks. House Democrats had a caucus meeting last night to discuss, well, what do we do now? And that's part of the problem. They haven't had a game plan, and Republicans have been on the attack. They struck a deal that most people think benefited mostly the Republicans. And, of course, they were helped by the November 2nd elections. They have the political momentum. Democrats do not. But that is the problem, is that Democrats for 10 years, many of them, well, certainly some of them, who voted against the 2001 Bush tax cuts and have criticized the tax cuts for the wealthy and the emphasis on giving tax breaks for the wealthy, well, they're about to bring a bill to the floor, I think, that will extend all of these tax cuts as well as putting in this 35% tax rate. The interesting thing on the estate tax, too, is that because they weren't able to get a deal on the estate tax, there is no tax right now this year on it. So the question is, if they don't tackle this issue, then the estate tax would bump up to 55%. Democrats don't want that. They want 45%. So there are some on the right who say, well, there's no death tax right now. So in essence, even though you push it to 35%, you're raising taxes from what it is now. Other Republicans say, well, that's ridiculous. There needs to be a tax on it. And just because of a logjam in the negotiations last year, there is no tax this year.
But it sounds, Bob, as though you're saying the Democrats have very little time and not a whole lot of leverage to do something here. Republicans are probably going to end up with what the deal they cut with the president.
Well, that's right. And the president this morning, once again, was out, had a press conference. He's meeting with business leaders. And he has made the case this will help the economy. This tax package is good policy. It will be a stimulus for the economy. House Democrats are very frustrated with the president. I mean, remember on Friday, President Obama made the unusual step of inviting former President Clinton to appear at the White House to make the case this was the best deal Democrats could have gotten.
Yep.
It's just enormous pressure from the White House on House Democrats right now.
We all saw it. Window closing, debate still alive around the estate tax in particular. Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill, thank you very much for being with us, Bob.
Thank you.
Here's a little tape from Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, his nine-hour filibuster speech last Friday on the floor of the Senate, insisting that the vast majority of Americans, have nothing to do with the estate tax.
This tax applies only to the top 0.3% of American families. 99.7% of American families will not pay one nickel in an estate tax. This is not a tax on the rich. This is a tax on the very, very, very rich.
The estate tax, the old chestnut, back in the middle of a very hot debate right now in Washington. We're going to look at it. We're going to hear from political players in this debate. But first, joining me now in the studio is Ray Madoff, professor at Boston College Law School and an expert on the estate tax, author of Immortality and the Law, The Rising Power of the American Dead. Ray Madoff, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us from Washington is Douglas Holtz Aiken, former Congressional Budget Office Director and Chief Economic Advisor to the presidential campaign of Senator John McCain, Republican, of course, now president of the American Action Forum. Douglas Holtz Aiken, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you both with us. Ray, you're writing about this all today in the New York Times. You're saying, hey, maybe we should just get over the estate tax and instead put an income tax on whatever people do inherit. But take us first to the big picture here. I mean, how do you think about the fact that this is back in the middle of debate? The Democrats are drawing a line at, you know, an exemption of $3.5 million in inheritance versus $5 million, 45% they want versus 35%. Is this important in economic terms, Ray?
Well, I think something that's been missing from the debate is that people don't focus on the fact that the estate tax is the only tax that we have on inherited wealth. And we need to focus on this broader question of how people who inherit wealth should participate in the tax revenues that need to be raised for the country as a whole. The debate has been mired in terms of these percentage amounts and the exemption amount, and I imagine that much of the public is lost in terms of understanding what the real difference is. And so one of the important things to do is to be able to bring the public along to understand why it matters about the estate tax.
But Douglas Holtz Aiken, is it important in fiscal terms here? I'm hearing, I'm not sure what the number is, something like $23 billion maybe over the 2 years of this agreement. Is it something like that that would be saved? Or $68 billion, Ray Madoff is holding up a number. How is the country's fiscal situation, which was at the heart of the November 2nd election, affected one way or another by how this goes, Douglas?
Directly, very little. The federal budget is now well over $3 trillion. The kinds of monies that are on the table in this debate are trivial compared to a deficit of $1.3 trillion last year, projected deficits that will be $1 trillion over the next decade every year. So this is not a debate about the revenue. This is a debate about what is the appropriate way to tax Americans. And I think that's a healthy debate to have. One of the things that would be useful, I think, would be to have the discussion that Ray suggested about, do you want to tax estates or inheritances? We've never really had that debate. And if we are going to have an estate tax, evaluate it from the conventional metrics of tax policy for the revenue that you raise. How much cost is there in terms of economic growth and efficiency? What's the administrative cost? How hard is it to comply? And on the fairness issue, who really pays the estate tax? I mean, sure, estates send in the check, but evidence from even leading Democrats, Alan Blinder and Joe Stiglitz, are that in the end, the estate tax is a tax that is borne by wage earners. And so those are people lower in the income distribution, and it's misleading to talk about this as a tax on the super wealthy.
Well, I mean, if we go back to the beginning, right, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, back in the early 1900s, a century ago, was saying we need this because without it we have inherited wealth that comes down and essentially corrupts democracy. We have too much concentrated wealth, he was saying, and now we're getting back up to those kind of concentrations again.
That's right. I mean, I think the real issue that needs to be addressed is this problem of wealth concentration in this country, and this is something that's fallen by the wayside. How do we want wealth distributed in this country? Do we want to have a strong middle class? And the estate tax plays a role in this, even if it only raises a small amount of revenue. The truth is the estate tax goes directly to this issue of progressivity. I'm surprised about this idea that it primarily applies to wage earners. I don't think the numbers back that up at all. And indeed, you wouldn't have had the lobbying done by the wealthiest 15 families in the country to get rid of the estate tax if that had been the case. I think the true beneficiaries of the reductions in the estate tax are to the super wealthy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the estate tax, House Democrats' big sticking point on the tax deal, and Republicans' line in the sand. Douglas Holtz Aiken has joined us. He's former head of the Congressional Budget Office, has looked at this, and was chief economic advisor to Republican Senator John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign, joins us from Washington. Ray Madoff joins me in the studio, professor at Boston College Law School, spent a lot of time looking at the estate tax. Her op-ed piece in the New York Times today is give up on the estate tax, but she would put income tax on what comes down to those who inherit. Let's get callers right in here. Dusty at Bowling Air Force Base in Washington, D.C. Dusty, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. I am a fiscal conservative. I am a Republican. I am just outraged that this is even a debate.
In which direction? What do you mean?
Well, because our nation is in so much trouble fiscally. We need money. And that the tax cuts were renewed, they should have never happened in the first place. It's like we're having George W. Bush Part 2 fiscally. And it's not what we should be doing. We need to pay down our debt. We're teaching our children that it's okay to charge, and consider it like free money.
And yet, people must have some right to pass on what they've earned to children. I mean, where would you set the rate? You know, the deal right now is 35% over $5 million. Does that sound, you know, I guess it doesn't sound good to you. So where would you put it?
Well, first of all, there are tax shelters that you can put money, a certain amount of money in for your children. It's not as if they're trying to take away the complete inheritance.
Yeah, but where would you, you know, on the top line, where would you, what do you think is fair? To take half of what someone has saved in a lifetime, 90%, 10%? Where would you put it?
I think probably 20% is very fair. When we're talking about the, you know, super, super rich.
But that's lower. I mean, Republicans have already agreed to 35%. I mean, they're already, you know, over 5 million. Now, that's a nice exemption, I guess, but still.
Well, I don't have a problem with 50%. It's not a parent's job to take care of their children financially after they're adults. We're supposed to be earning our own way.
Dusty, I really appreciate
teaching our children to do that.
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. I really appreciate your call. Douglas Holtz Aiken, that's kind of along the lines of the old Teddy Roosevelt line. Here's a speech he gave in 1910 I'm looking at, and he says, the really big fortune, this was Teddy Roosevelt, the swollen fortune by the mere fact of its size acquires qualities which differentiate it in kind as well as in degree from what is possessed by men of relatively small means. Therefore, said Teddy, I believe in a graduated income tax on big fortunes and a graduated inheritance tax on big fortunes properly safeguarded against evasion and increasing rapidly in amount with the size of the estate. That is 100 years ago. Does that still make sense to you, Doug? Or have things changed in some reason, in some way that make that irrelevant?
Well, I think we now have a better understanding of the economics of the estate tax. It was perceived as a benign instrument of social justice, but the evidence that has come to light over the past couple of decades paints a considerably different picture. We know that, for example, the estate tax lowers capital accumulation in the U.S. economy. There's strong evidence of that, particularly by an economist, Joel Slemrod, at the University of Michigan. And that's the mechanism by which we see it impact workers, because if we don't accumulate capital, we don't get productivity growth, and they don't see their standards of living rise. So this is an instrument of economic policy.
But we understand right now...
It has impacts. Mm-hmm. The point, Tom, is mm-hmm. it has impacts that have to be traded off against the desire to attack concentrations of wealth. And mm-hmm. I think the second piece of evidence that we've seen that's very important in this debate is that the sources of inequality have nothing to do with tax policy. They have everything to do with globalization, everything to do with the rising return to higher education. And to solve inequality problems, you have to pick the right instrument. Education is the key, not tax policy.
But, I mean, we have gigantic accumulations of capital right now that are not being spent. It seems like we've got, you know, more capital than we can shake a stick at.
You certainly don't want to make something like an estate tax policy on the basis of a recession. And we do have a growth problem in the United States. And the only potential driver of economic growth right now is the business community. It has the financial wherewithal to spend. Households are strapped. Governments are strapped. That's a different policy challenge than the estate tax.
Ray Madoff, have we learned something in this last century about the economics of the estate tax that makes it less desirable to put some, you know, government bite on what's passed down? Doug says we have.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that what we've learned is that when we had high estate taxes and progressive income tax rates, coupled with progressive policies, things like the GI Bill that provided college educations and broadly and home loan assistance programs, you actually had a growing middle class and you had a reduction in the amount of wealth controlled from the wealthiest of wealthy Americans. So, for example, the high was in the early part of the 20th century, the wealthiest 1% controlled 50% of the country's wealth.
Okay, back when Teddy Roosevelt was talking and worried.
Right, and then there were all these progressive policies that were put in place, including estate taxes with rates as high as 77%. And by 1976...
In this country.
In this country. Okay. And by 1976, the top 1% controlled 20% of the country's wealth. And the rest of the wealth was not owned by the government. It was actually in the hands of a stronger middle class. And what we see today is a reversal of these policies that have come about as a... I think a tax policy has played a significant role. The beginning of the cuttings of taxes by Reagan carried through afterwards. Mm-hmm. And now the top 1% of the country controls over 33% of the country's wealth. And if you look at the rest of the country, 80% of the country controls only 16% of the country's wealth. And what we've seen a real loss in is a strong middle class.
Nick Kristof at the New York Times calls this country, says we're in banana republic territory now. You know, we used to sort of laugh at South American countries who had those big disparities in wealth. But Douglas Holtz-Aiken makes the case that this is not a bad thing for capital accumulation, and that's important for productivity in the economy, right?
I don't really see where that's true. I mean, to say that for a wealthy person to control, you know, for somebody to inherit $8 billion free of taxes is somehow better for the country than to spend the money either on giving benefits for employment or for or more targeted programs to encourage the growth of employment in this country, I don't see why that would be the case.
Let's hear from our listeners. Van Horn, Iowa. Tom's calling. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mr. Ashbrook, for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is, I work in a middle-income job. I'm working. Our country's broke. We're bankrupt. And I don't even know, with all these budgets they're talking about, if they put the $2 trillion war we had in Iraq, an illegal war, in my opinion, on the books yet. But if you are working, I would allow my taxes to go up some. And the more you make, the more they should go up to pay this down, because we're losing.
And what about the estate tax, the tax on, you know, wealth that families have accumulated in a lifetime of work, Tom?
Well, that's the person that made it. But when they pass that on, that should be taxed, because the person that's getting it didn't really make it. They're just standing there with their hand out. And you're talking about millions and millions of dollars, which is out of reach for most Americans. You heard all the percentages of one of the top one-fifth of 1% or something. I don't see, it's been like that for 10 years. They've had this windfall, and nobody's building factories in America now. I mean, we're losing them as we speak.
Tom, in Van Horn, Iowa, I appreciate your call. We've got a congressman who's right in the middle of this debate in Washington with us right now. Let me put him on. And thanks for calling, Tom. Congressman Michael Burgess, Republican from Texas 26th District, is with us. That's northern Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton County area in Texas, elected in 2002. Joins us from Washington. Congressman Burgess, thank you very much for being here.
Ed, good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
So here we are. Republicans have cut a deal with the president. $5 million exemption on the estate tax, 35% above that. Democrats are saying let's make it $3.5 million and 45%. Is this a big deal difference, Congressman?
Oh, if there's, you know, let me just say up front that I am generally not supportive of the package on the table. But I think, and I don't want to speak for everyone else in, on my side, but if there were any structural change to the deal that the White House and Senate Republicans worked out, that it would that would quickly be a pretty toxic on my side in the House.
Everything might unravel. We get that. But what about the estate tax on its merits? Is it what's the importance to you of that higher exemption and that lower tax rate on the estate tax? Why is that important to you, Congressman?
Well, I come from a part of the world where there is still a lot of rural activity. There still are a lot of family farms. There are certainly businesses that have been built by an individual and tend to stay in families, so family-owned businesses. And the problem, part of the problem then, is the pricing of those assets or the adjusted baseline when someone dies. And the family then suddenly having to pay an enormous tax bill or sell off the family farm.
Well, then what about, would there be another approach here where, let's say it wasn't made on a little family farm?
Yeah, there are other approaches. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we didn't even have this discussion, the fact that there wasn't a standalone bill, the fact that it didn't go through the regular committee process, the fact that no one on my side in the House was even able to offer an idea or an amendment. Remember, this was a deal struck by Republican senators in the White House.
Right.
So, yeah, if we want to go back to the drawing board, then fine, let's go back to the drawing board. But we don't start with tinkering with the deal that the Republicans of the Senate and the White House came up with last week. Let's absolutely go back to the drawing board.
What about a deal that put a higher tax rate on the super rich where it wasn't built on the family farm? Maybe it was built on derivatives trading. I don't know. What about a higher tax rate? That's what Teddy Roosevelt said a century ago. You know, let it go up.
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, here's the deal. Most of this money has been taxed at least once, if not two, three, or four times. So, you know, you've got to come back to what is our fundamental problem in this country? Is the problem that the American people haven't been hit with enough taxes, or is it the problem that the bias is always towards spending, and Congress has had that bias since the enactment of the 1974 Budget Act, and we don't seem to be dealing with that fundamental problem? We are now out on the fringes of trying to see how we can squeeze yet a few more dollars from a few more people. That's the wrong approach.
What about cleaning up the deficit with some of that revenue that might come from a higher rate?
When has that happened, Tom? When has that ever happened? I haven't been here that long, but wasn't that the promise that was made in the Reagan administration? Wasn't that the promise that was made to the first George Bush? That doesn't happen. What happens is the taxes go up, the spending goes up, and the deficit gets worse.
What percentage of your constituents in the 26th district in Texas do you think will be affected by the estate tax rate one way or another? I mean, how many really are going to have an estate $5 million
plus? I think I don't know the actual number on that. I think the number might surprise us. But, here's the thing. I'll just tell you that this package, that the proposal that's out there right now, is pretty deeply unpopular in my part of the world. And it is unpopular because what was this last election about? It was, we don't like you doing big $800 or $900 billion bills that are complex and convoluted and incorporate several different policies and mangle them all together and then pass it. People don't like that. And what I'm hearing back home is, it looks like you're doing the same thing that we told you we didn't want you to do anymore. This looks to them like another TARP bill or another stimulus bill. And I recognize there are real problems with the tax rates that are going to go up on January 1st. But at the same time, the way this thing has come forward, look, we could have fixed the tax problem any time in the last 10 years. both when we were in power or when the Democrats were in power. It was within our, we all knew the expiration date was looming out there. This wasn't something that caught everyone by surprise the 1st of December. It's been there for a while. In September of this year, there were 40 Democrats who were ready to vote with the Republicans as far as extending the 2001-2003 tax policy. Had Speaker Pelosi brought this to the floor in September, it would have been done.
Of course, it's Mitch,
single
of course,
issue, as a single issue, just extending the tax policy.
Of course, it's Mitch McConnell cutting the deal now with President Obama. Congressman, Republican Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas, we're grateful to you for being with us. Thanks so much for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Douglas Holtz Eakin, there's a Republican congressman who doesn't want to touch a thing about this and, you know, sort of threatened warning there that it could unravel in a hurry. He's not happy either. But among the things he doesn't want to touch is that estate tax. It sounds like he's happy with it right where it is in the deal.
Well, I think there's a process issue here, which, you know, they're trying to respect the deal that was cut and get this done. On balance, that's the best thing for the economy. It would be an extremely damaging thing to let all these taxes go up at the end of the year. So that's the political theater that we're seeing. I mean, the fundamental issue going forward is we will have to have a tax code that serves us better. And in designing that, you know, facts are pesky things. And on the estate tax, we see lots of rhetoric. And, you know, you can quote Teddy Roosevelt or look at people's opinions. But the reality on the ground is that the tax rate that matters for people is the one when they're in their 40s and 50s because they're planning. And not everyone who ends up in the estate tax is affected by the estate tax because some are avoiding it. Some are hoping to be in it because they hope to be successful. They aren't. And if you follow the research literature, if you look at the studies that have been done that are based on statistics and the relationship between the estate tax and the economy, jobs are at stake. Our estimates are about 250,000 jobs are at stake in a 35 versus a 45% rate. Incomes for people other than the super rich are at stake. And those have to be part of the debate as well. To do this on the basis of inflamed rhetoric, I think, is a mistake.
Inflamed rhetoric, you can call it that, but Teddy Roosevelt, who was elected president of the United States, was talking about the quality of our democracy. So was Justice Brandeis. I mean, does it worry you that concentrations of wealth have grown so big again in this country, in political terms?
I think it's an important issue, and it troubles me. But the solution is not to pick the wrong way to solve the problem. Our fundamental problems are that globally, those who have relatively low skills are losing out because of the entrance of competition from India, China, and a lot of developing countries. And those who don't have any savings are losing out because there's a high return to saving. Our problem should be to get ahead of that, give people an education, get some savings into the hands of people. They will then benefit from these same economic forces. You cannot use a tax policy to swim against a tide of global proportions. It simply won't work.
Ray Madoff, the message there, sort of don't worry about the inequality. It's other issues at work. So no problem with the estate deal.
That's not what I said.
That's what I heard.
The inequality,
sorry.
But fix it with the appropriate instrument.
Ray?
I agree that we should be fixing it with the appropriate instruments, and those are things definitely like education and job promotion, skills training. But where are we going to get the money to do it? Whenever we try to spend, we say there's too much of a problem with the deficit. And so the only way we get money is by raising taxes. And when we figure out who should pay those taxes, it seems strange to me that we say that the wealthy should be excluded from that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the estate tax. House Democrats' big sticking point, it turns out, on the whole tax deal. And Republicans' line in the sand. Not the only one, but a big one in this whole debate. We've been joined in this hour by Ray Madoff, professor at Boston College Law School, and by Douglas Holtz Eakin, former economic advisor to Republican presidential candidate John McCain, former director as well of the Congressional Budget Office. And we've got another political player from right in the middle of this debate with us right now from Washington, Democratic Congressman Jim McDermott from Washington State's 7th District, that includes most of Seattle, elected in 1988. He's been a leading and vocal critic of the whole tax deal that President Obama cut with the Republican leadership. Congressman McDermott, thank you very much for being here.
It's good to be here, Tom.
Why do you think? We just heard from Republican Congressman Burgess from Texas. He wants the package just the way it is, but House Democrats are really up in arms about the estate tax in the midst of all this. Why this element?
Well, I think there are a number of elements. That's one element we focused on. But basically, in 1980, the top 5% people in this country economically had $8 trillion worth of wealth. 30 years later, they have $40 trillion worth of wealth. They have quadrupled their wealth in the 30 years. Now,
what's wrong with that? We want Americans to get ahead?
Well, I'm not against getting ahead, but I am against the shift of wealth that has left the top doing very well, and the middle class has barely had any salary increases. Their health care costs have gone up. The costs of educating their kids have gone up, and yet they are barely able, and they've accumulated huge consumer debt. So every way, the middle class is getting clobbered, and the top is not. And I really think in a time like this, when you have 15% unemployed, and you've got 6 million or 15 million unemployed, and you got 6 million foreclosures, is a time to draw the line and say no more goes to the top.
So, but what the Democrats, as I understand it, Congressman, are proposing is, you know, an exemption to be passed along of 3.5 million instead of 5, tax rate of 45 instead of 35. Is that difference a big deal? Does that begin to solve what you're talking about?
Well, I personally would go for something a little less generous. I happen to have Bill Gates Sr. living in my district. And Bill and I sat down a long time ago. You may have seen him recently. He was on one of the morning programs on Sunday, along with Warren Buffett and Ted Turner, talking about the fact that the wealthy in this country should give back to the country. And the numbers that are in my bill, which were they were 2 million exemption, and a 45 to 55% rate, he and I discussed it, and he said, that's a fair rate. I think we have to face the fact that this country gives enormous opportunity, but there comes a time at which we have to give back to our country.
But let me ask you this. That's Bill Gates Sr. The money in his family is measured in many billions at this point. If his son gave up half of his fortune, he'd still have, I don't know, what, $25, $30 billion to pass on. So, but what about people who don't have that much, who, you know, who maybe have a $3 million? I mean, these days, a home alone in many places can be, you know, $1 million, $2 million more. What about people who want to pass that on, or a farm or small business?
There clearly is a way to pass on something to your children, and it's nice, the idea to pass along to your children. But what America is built on is the idea that we have a chance here. You're not guaranteed anything. You're given a chance to make it. And what we have done now, by the way we've structured our economic system, we have made education more and more outside the reach of people. They can't afford to go to school because they can't pay for it. And my belief is that we ought to be plowing much more money of our money back into investment in the human capital of this country. That's why we're slipping behind. You see the articles about our education is dropping. We're now 11th in the world in college education and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is a reflection of the failure to invest and allowing the money to go into the pockets of the rich to be kept wherever they keep it. I don't know.
Congressman, would you take one call from a listener here from New York? Would you be good enough?
Absolutely.
Kathy in New York, Williamsville, New York. You're on the air with Congressman Jim McDermott.
Well, you know, the talk is so offensive. You know, if I am lucky enough and I work hard enough and I'm lucky enough to put some money away and I want to pass it on to my children, the thought that the federal government, after they've already taxed me at 35%, can just come in and take half of it or 35% of it. It is, you talk about the money like it's your money. We are individuals. It's our money. And you're wasting it on studying bovine leukemia and all of these other things that you should not be involved in. And there's no end to it. And it's really just to hear people talk like, well, they've been lucky. They've got to give back. Yes, look at what Bill Gates did.
Mm-hmm.
Voluntarily, he's giving his money back. That's what you should do. If you have $1 million and you want to donate that back to the government after you die, we would love for you to do that. But to just confiscate it, it is an awful thing. And to even talk about it like we owe it to you is a terrible thing.
Kathy, we've got you loud and clear, and I appreciate your call. There you go, Congressman. There's the other view. What do you say?
Well, it clearly, she's not talking about herself.
Well, you don't know
talking
that.
About what she thinks if she someday is a wealthy person who has a $12 million estate, and she dies and wants to pass all $12 million to her children.
Sounds like she does.
Now, what?
Sounds like she does. That's what she'd like to do in that case.
Well, but the fact is, this is not going to affect her and her children. Well, there's only 39,000 families we're talking about in this country who are getting all this money, and she has trouble making it, and her kids have trouble making it. And so it is, in my view, a short-sighted kind of investment, or a lack of investment, if you will, that allows us to say that we're going to let people pile it up somewhere and not use it for the public good. It really is a question of the public good. I think the public good requires that we think about what's good for everybody in this society, not just for people who are on the top.
We're talking about it today. We're debating it. But have you already lost this contest, Congressman? Is the deal done? Do you have the votes to change? You know, is this train on the tracks and headed toward the station, period?
Well, Tom, what I've said repeatedly is this was put in 2001 by the Republicans. They said this was going to be the best thing since sliced bread. We've had it for 10 years. We are now with 15 million people unemployed and 6 million foreclosures. It has not worked, and they want us to put it back in, extend it. And I voted against it in 2001, and I am now being put in a position where I'm supposed to ratify a bad public policy that hasn't worked. They can do this on the 5th of January. On the 5th of January, they will be in charge of the House of Representatives. They can pass it as H.R. 1, the first bill. It will go to the Senate. They've already passed it. It'll be on the president's desk by the 6th of January, and there will be no one will have missed a step.
But don't
so
ask you to.
They can do it.
Yeah.
I don't agree with the policy.
Congressman Jim McDermott from Washington State, 7th District in Seattle. Thank you very much for being with us today, Congressman.
My pleasure.
Douglas Holtz-Aiken, what about, there's an argument that comes back. It says, look, we've had essentially Bush tax policy for a decade, and look where the economy is. Why do more of that? What do you say to that, General? We hear that often.
Well, I think there are two responses. The first and most important is this is about 2011, 2012, 2013.
Yeah, but we have to learn from where we've been.
And we certainly do. And you cannot expect a difference in tax rates from 39.6 to 35 to offset a dot-com bubble collapsing, an attack at 9/11, a whole series of overseas wars. I mean, it has been a traumatic period for this economy, and there's no question about that. And simple explanations of the whole world based on tax policy simply are misleading. The world's a much more complicated place than that. It is important, I believe, to be rational about what we're seeing. It will not be the case that we can tax our way out of our budgetary difficulties. And we are spending so much now, and we're projected to spend so much more, that we would have to nearly double everyone's taxes in the United States to try to keep up. And that would be extraordinarily damaging to the economy. So we do have to be honest about the need to control spending. And the second thing we need to be honest about is, who's actually financing the government? I mean, the middle class pays payroll taxes, but they get back more in Social Security and in Medicare than those payroll taxes ever pay for.
Mm-hmm.
The remainder of the government is financed by the top half of Americans. Bottom half don't pay any income tax. And the vast majority is paid by the top 5%, 50% or more of taxes. That finances all of the things that the Constitution defined to be the government. National defense, education, roads, highways, things like that. So the idea that somehow the rich aren't contributing and they aren't kicking in is simply misleading.
Ray Madoff, what do you say?
I think that it's a difference between the top 5% and the top one half of 1%, which is really who's at stake with the estate tax question. I do agree that it is a much more complicated issue, and it's one that's going to involve how we spend our money and how we survive in a global economy, and I completely agree about that. But in the end, we have to address this question of fairness. How do we fairly allocate the taxes that are necessary to run this country? And I think the caller's point is an important one. But one that can get us a little bit off track. There's a concern about the size of the government, and I understand that concern. But once we
pretty
have,
vivid concern. November 2nd, you know, that vote is standing right behind us here.
Absolutely. But once we decide what the size of the government should be, what tax dollars should go to, strip it down as basic as you want, we are still left with the question of how do we apportion the taxes fairly amongst the public.
Doug says the affluent are already paying the lion's share.
Well, the affluent are paying the lion's share because this problem of wealth concentration is so severe mm-hmm. that when you're actually talking about what the 50% range of this country looks like, it's actually a little scary to see. The wealth is really in the super wealthy in this country. And so we don't want to I don't think there's a big difference between who is in the top 5% and who's in the top 1% or half of 1%. And I think that's something that the public hasn't really been focusing on.
Banana Republic territory, as critics would have it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from Shri in Des Moines, Iowa. Shri, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, thank you. I'm an orthopedic surgeon calling from Iowa, and I just want to give an example of my own situation. I came from a lower middle class, and walked up the ladder.
Yep.
And I probably belong to the top 1% now.
Okay.
Now, I drive 70 miles every day to work and work hard. And I could probably retire today with my savings and still be happy. My question is to the Democratic congressman specifically is, what's the incentive I have driving every day, working hard, probably creating and keeping 20 more jobs around me because I'm a surgeon, and still provide the care to the people? And why should I do this if I know that my income is going to be taxed, retaxed and retaxed, and eventually what I'm going to be left with is going to be taxed again? And my point is, it's me who has to decide how much I should earn, how hard I should work, and what I should pass on to my kids. And eventually, that's what the concentration of the capital through hard work, and that's the most important thing, is going to decide how hard I'm going to work.
Shri, but let me ask you, we're talking about the difference between 35 or 45% here. So let's say that, you know, it meant you were going to leave your kids, I don't know, $8 million instead of $11 million. Would you put your feet up and say, forget it, I'm out of here?
Well, it's up to me to decide what I'm going to pass on and what I'm going to give charity to, because, you know, the earlier caller told the example of Bill Gates. It's we who decide. If we know that we are going to be taxed and taxed, then obviously the charity part that comes into our mind is going to go away. We're just going to say, okay, we're going to be left with 10 cents of every dollar we're going to make, and we're not going to pass this on to anyone else except our kids. So I think we got to look at the perspective of what kind of society we are creating. Is it a socialism outright, or is it a socialism with a makeover of capitalism?
Shri, was America socialist in the 20th century, do you think?
I don't think so. So far,
well, I mean, we had 70-something percent at one point in that century. But our time is short, but I really appreciate your call. Be careful on that long drive. Ray Madoff, what do you say?
I think that there's a real misperception here about who benefits from these tax savings. Wage earners could benefit from a good tax plan that lowered income tax rates on wages. Employers could benefit from lowering taxes on employers and encouraging employment.
But Shree's looking at what he's going to leave his children and saying, don't give me a disincentive to get out there and work.
Absolutely. But what he doesn't understand is that this type of tax bill, the real beneficiaries of it are not the wage earners. The real beneficiaries are people with wealth in the billions who have not paid any taxes. This is capital growth assets. Mm-hmm. And the giving them a tax break, it's going to come out of all the rest of us. You have to get the money somewhere, and it's going to come from higher income tax rates that he's paying.
And so there we are. This never seems to get resolved. Douglas Holtzakin, I mean, you make the case that there are going to be more jobs here. Is that so clear? Is it which way leads to more jobs if we want to look at it in just pure economic growth terms? Not everybody's so sure that the concentration of wealth produces a lot more jobs on the evidence.
We know that if you tax capital, it affects small business owners and it affects the jobs that they create. That evidence, I think, is unmistakable. We know that at the same time, Americans have a long tradition of favoring progressive tax structures. We've always had a progressive income tax. We know, third, that if you look around the globe at places with and without estate taxes, you cannot make a compelling case that the estate tax is what either deters concentrations of wealth or encourages them if you lower it. So we will have a debate for a long time about the appropriate way to raise the money that that we spend through the federal government. It'll involve, you know, what's good for the economy and what's fair. And we're seeing that right now. But I think the role of the estate tax has been badly misunderstood and needs to be clarified.
Well, what do you think, Ray? Final thought on where we're headed here. Ray Madoff.
I agree with Doug on this. I think that we need to focus on the recipients of the wealth as a way of clarifying the debate, because there is a lot of misunderstanding in what's going on here.
Misunderstanding and huge concentration and huge pressure in Washington today on what path we will be taking in this country. Ray Madoff from Boston College Law School, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And Douglas Holtz-Aiken in Washington, thank you very much for your time.
My thanks. Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.